Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Guys are doing good on the text page. We were talking about Houston athletes that are untouchable in trade talks, and y'all started sending in things that are untouchable here in Houston. Good job. Whataburger, that's an easy one. Papa Doe, Bun B, untradeable. Paul Wall, untradeable, untouchable. No, we're not trading them to the West Coast for any West Coast rappers. No, they're ours.
Right, right.
Chopped and screwed, baby. Yeah.
Somebody earlier had said, hey, James Harden was untouchable at one point in time. And then you and I were talking during the break about James Harden. James Harden had a good game last night and ended up having a really good game. So that was, what, game six?
Game six,
and,
yeah.
And you said, well, let's see, the Clippers fans might, let's see how they feel about James Harden. James Harden already did have a disastrous game six.
Yeah, I said,
five and six last year.
He did? Okay, yeah. I said, this is cool. Another fan base will get a taste of elimination game Harden here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, last year, game five versus Dallas, he was 2 for 12.
Okay.
And then game six, he was 5 for 16.
Okay.
He was 0 for 6 from three in game six last year.
So they've got a taste. Yeah. Okay, so they're actually like kind of playing with house money that he even got them to a game seven right now.
Yeah, probably. No, they already know. They know the full James Harden experience of collapsing.
Fair.
At the end of the
okay,
series.
Good. I'm glad you looked that up. Frenchie's chicken, somebody says on the untouchable list here. Frenchie's chicken's really good. Someone says, unfortunately, the Astrodome appears to be untouchable and indestructible. Yeah, no, dude, the Astrodome is like what Jose Abreu is right now on the Astros balance tax sheet. You know, it's just like, yes.
If we have a nuclear Armageddon at some point where just everything is just leveled.
Yeah.
And just whatever humans remain, from Australia or wherever, some pocket of the world where they make it through, they build up a new civilization. Someday, 3,000 years from now, archaeologists will be pouring over this entire continent. And all they'll be able to figure out is that this culture worshipped this huge concrete dome.
Yeah.
The only thing left standing in the wreckage was this gigantic concrete dome that must have been the holiest of all holy things in this culture.
Just a bunch of cockroaches smoking cigars, hanging and staring at the Astrodome. That's all that's left, man.
We don't know how they even did it with their limited intelligence and technology, but they built this.
Yeah.
Probably aliens from outer space. Yes.
Yep. What about the OG, the first Houston Texan to ever get a safety, Seth Payne, untradeable? That's a text.
Yeah. That's not a unanimous opinion.
Well, there's a second one here. Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast, untouchable.
That's Sean Tenderass.
Tender.
Yeah.
I got hit with that a lot back in the day. All right, anonymous executives. I know some shows feel like, put your name on it, man. Not this show. We like when you don't put your name on it.
As long as it comes from a writer who's known to be legitimate and actually doesn't, some writers I don't publish the anonymous quotes because I feel like half of them are made up.
Really?
The bona fide ones that I know are tied in and what have you, they're the ones that are
way more selective than me. If it says anonymous on there, it makes it into the show prep for me. But this is a good one. This is, I believe, Mike Sando. It's The Athletic. Let's see if it's one of our guys here that we trust. Mike Sando. So Mike Sando is it? I would say, Seth, he's at the the far end, the trustable end of journos that go get anonymous executive quotes. He's very, very good. He might be the OG when it comes to this stuff. All right, here's what they're saying about the Houston Texans. We'll get to a couple of the other teams. Sando says this: with so much focus on the Texans' O-line, Houston pulled a bit of an end-around by remaking the receiver room. Early reviews were positive. All right, this is what one executive says. Quote, they have Tank Dell coming off of injury and lost Stephon Diggs, but man, when Dell gets healthy, adding the receivers they got, Higgins, Noel, to go with Nico Collins, wow. C.J. Stroud is going to have weapons galore, this executive.
Yeah, that's pretty optimistic. I think with Tank Dell,
is the most optimistic part of that the part about the two rookies being impactful, or Tank Dell coming back healthy to be impactful?
I think that Tank Dell coming back healthy and the same version of himself, and I'm not saying it can't be done. I think there's some people that just don't want to believe that that was a really devastating injury. And I get that, but for this year, like, let's just talk about this year. That would be awesome. It would be an incredible story if he came back and was productive this year.
At any point.
It's really hard for somebody whose calling card is their quickness and their speed and everything else to come back from an injury like that in less than a year. So I'm putting him on the shelf and just hoping that he takes – that he has all the time that he needs to recover. So I'm not really thinking about it. I think the two receivers, I mean, it's pretty unanimous when you hear people that cover the draft talk about Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, that those guys are both very much guys that they had them slotted where they did, but they really, really like them. And some of them just either didn't play in high-profile offenses, or in the case of Jaden Higgins, he's a guy that just improved steadily throughout his career. Jalen Noel, there's the speed and explosiveness alone really tantalizes a lot of people. The fact that the Texans got both of them has a lot of the draft nicks saying, like, oh, okay, good on you. And a lot of it, anonymous executives and whatnot.
I have yet to see, people have their various grades on these guys, whether Higgins is a second or a first rounder, whether Noel is there's people that had him at the back end of the first round in their drafts, a couple of people, anywhere from first to third. I have yet to find anybody who says either of those guys were a sketchy pick. Like, they have been universally praised for those two picks, in my opinion.
The nice thing about Noel is that playing slot receivers, it's tough for rookies. There's a lot of nuance that goes into it. And you can line him up on the outside. It's not like he's going to be exclusively slot. But just by having that level of speed and explosiveness there, he doesn't have to be a part of every single package or in every single situation. There's times where just getting his speed on the field is going to make a difference and open things up for other people.
Yeah, I guess for context of what you're saying about the slot receiver, Cecil Shorts used to say that. Cecil was a slot receiver. Cecil said that slot receiver, outside of quarterback, slot receiver is the next most, like, the most put on your plate play-to-play position in terms
of the neck up in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's really having a natural feel for it, but then really studying and learning where the soft spots in the zone are, like how teams are rotating their coverages, all that. Because if you want to get open quickly and you think it's going to be, you know, cover two, but all of a sudden it's man, you got to make adjustments really, really quick.
Yep. Execanon on the Texans. Let's continue. Collins and Sando says Collins and Higgins, he points out, they're both 6'4". The same executive added this: you don't have physical enough corners to cover two 6'4" wide receivers. And that's interesting, Seth, because I thought about, there was this notion with a lot of people before the draft, well, Higgins is too much like Nico, so why would you want two receivers that are the same? I'm like, too much like the guy who's really awesome? Like, that makes and my other thought was, it seems to be working out okay for the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, who have T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, who are very similar wide receivers.
I very much go with the Daryl Morey philosophy on this, is don't overthink it. Daryl Morey's philosophy is get as many good basketball players on your team as you can
figure
out the scheme based on what fits you and what suits you.
Yep.
And likewise with Jaden Higgins, I don't worry that there might be some redundancy in having a big, tough, physical X-type receiver. Just figure out a way to make it work. Yeah.
Because I think similarly, like, Nico is not – Nico and I think similarly Jaden Higgins, they're not one-trick ponies. They're not just guys that use their size to box – you know, they're not – power forwards. Like they can get open too, and they've got deceptive speed for guys their size.
They have deep speed.
Yes.
And as long as now both of them athletically, their profile is very, very similar. Yeah. And at okay, on some of the shorter stuff, they're not as shifty. They're big guys. It's harder for them to really get low on their breaks and their stops and everything. But that's why you got to have speed with the slot guys underneath. So, yeah, I mean, to take it to an extreme, arguing that you don't want a guy who's the same type of receiver as Nico Collins, taken to an extreme, would be like saying, well, we can't have both Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson on the same
team.
Right, that's we're going to have spacing issues. Or I don't know. It's just, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense, yep. So Sando points out the Texans move back out of the first round to 34 after the Vikings took Donovan Jackson. Two more offensive line go off the board late in the first round, as we've heard Nick talk about on Texans All Access, and we'll have Nick on the show next week. We're still working on what day. But they did try to trade back into the back end of the first round after they had moved out to possibly, you know, presumably to get one of those offensive linemen. Houston then maneuvered in the second round, Sando points out, up to 48 to take Arianti Ursary at 48 overall in between Higgins and Noel. Another anonymous executive says this about the Ursary pick. They got out from under the money of Tunsil. Ursary surely is not Tunsil. He's a stiffer, taller guy who they can probably get by with within their scheme with what they're going to do. They don't need a downhill physical left tackle, end quote.
Yeah.
The one thing there that I think is maybe quick to maybe scratching the surface on it, they got out from under the money of Tunsil. I it wasn't just money, I don't think, with getting out from under the Laramie situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you're genuinely happy with your left tackle, you make the contract work.
Yeah.
You don't get out from underneath his money.
Yeah.
You get out from underneath somebody else's on the team.
Yeah, yeah.
The left tackle isn't the guy that you do it with.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's way more to it. The other part I take issue with there is, okay, nobody knows exactly what the scheme's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because he says he's not like Tunsil, you know, athletically. But then he also says, okay, they're not going to be a downhill scheme where he needs to be big and physical. I think they hope that he is that type of guy. He played in a scheme in college that was an outside zone based scheme and did really well with it for a guy that's 6'6", 330 plus pounds. He moves really, really well. The run blocking in the gap scheme and the power type stuff, that's going to be a work in progress, but he has all the physical traits that suggest he should be really good at that.
Yeah.
But yes, you can never project that a guy's going to be as good a pass protector as Laramie Tunsil. He's
no,
really good at that.
He's really good, yeah.
Yeah, and the other part about Ursary is that I think by and large what Jeremiah said when the Texans drafted Ursary is probably accurate. Some teams had him as a late first round guy. Other teams thought he was a third round guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is very much a whatever your favorite flavor is type of player. I think some people watch him and see that he's stiff legged and think, all right, no, there's no upside there. Other people watch him and say, okay, he's stiff legged, but he's still moving way more athletically and faster than a lot of the guys who look aesthetically better. And he's also really, really big and really, really strong. And that's so it's kind of a personal taste almost in what you're really looking for in your left tackle. And I think the Texans just, they tried to be as practical about it and said, look, he might be stiff-legged, but he still moves faster than a lot of the more supple athletes.
If that's one of the main criticisms against him. Is it possible to become less stiff-legged as an athlete when you get into the NFL? Like, is that just something he's going to be the whole
possible?
Time? Is it possible to become, like, is this just something we've got to live with? Like, this is just who he is. Like,
yeah, and I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
At offensive tackle, at guard, it's a little trickier,
yeah.
But at offensive tackle, there's plenty of guys, as long as you're massive.
Yeah.
If he were 6'6", 305 pounds,
yeah.
He'd be done.
Yeah.
But as long as you're massive, Trent Brown's a good example. Trent Brown doesn't have great knee bend, and he's 6'8",
yeah.
But he uses his size and his mass really well. And that's he can increase his flexibility
that's
and his pad
saying.
Level somewhat,
yeah.
But it's not a necessity,
yep.
As long as he knows how to use his mass.
Got you.
He's got excellent mass.
Yep, gotcha.
He's like, he's Jupiter, Sean.
He's Jupiter.
Nobody ever accuses Jupiter of not being big enough.
No, that's true. It is always very,
Never.
Very big. Yeah, no, that's a bad take. You'll show up at 9 o'clock on Fridays if you have that take.
Anonymous scout. He's not as big as everyone. Jupiter's not as big as everybody says.
Anonymous astrologist.
Yeah.
Astronomist, I guess. Astrologist would be if they were talking crap about Aquarius and whatnot. Another last exec compared the Texans to the Bengals because, okay, well, this is what I just said, because both teams have prioritized weaponry over the offensive line. Quote, the quarterback is going to have an 8 to 10 year relationship with those two Iowa State kids, and I think he's going to have a great year. Higgins can play outside the numbers in press coverage and win. The way he times his jumps, makes contested catches, wins on fade balls, jumps over guys. I love him. Noel is all business, end quote.
All business.
He's all business. Yeah. Yeah.
People have gushed about Noel's personality and football character and all of that. And with Higgins, you know, there was Higgins did an interview with, it was a guy on NFL on NBC. I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, at the Combine. And they asked him who he likes watching, and he said Keenan Allen, which was a little bit of a surprise. Just, I mean, Keenan Allen's, he's 6'2", but he's not one of these 6'4" type guys like Jaden Higgins is. But it's he likes the creativity of Keenan Allen's releases and route running. And you see a little bit of it in Jaden Higgins' game. He's got a little dead leg here. He does a little – you don't want to get too funky with that stuff because you try to emulate Keenan Allen completely, and that's not necessarily what you need to do.
Right.
But I think he's very – he seems very much like a student of the game, and that – a lot of the things he needs to refine, he understands the assignment, and he's been working on it already. He's just got to keep building on that.
They have some anonymous quotes in here about, it's about the AFC, so we'll hit a couple on the Colts and the Jags here in particular. It's interesting. Tyler Warren fell to being the second tight end in this class after, for most of draft season, it was him and then Colston Loveland. The Bears take Loveland at 10. The Colts take Warren at 14. They're obviously both very, very good players. This one exec says, a tight end like Loveland, number 10, taken number 10 by Chicago, is a dynamic athlete who can get open on his own and really affect the passing game. That's more valuable to me than what the Colts are getting because Warren is not running away from anyone, including middle linebackers, end quote. So nice little side swipe at Warren's lack of athleticism compared to Colston Loveland there.
Luckily, he's got a quarterback who's definitely going to lead him properly, and
he'll definitely lead him.
Right, I don't spot to really.
Properly is the key word. Yeah,
he'll lead him by a good 7 yards.
Yeah.
Tyler Warren, you got to stretch out for that, son.
Here's another one. Says this about Tyler Warren: they're going to have a lot of hats that you have to account for in the run game. He doesn't create all his separation with athleticism, but he's really big at the catch point. He can adjust. He's going to make contested catches. He's strong. You can do a lot of things across personnel groups with that guy.
So, he's not Dallas Clark in terms of as a receiver, but right. I think he's more of a complete tight end, perhaps. Yeah. But he also doesn't have Peyton Manning throwing him the ball.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be much more of a Kobe Fleener type experience for Tyler Warren.
I took under on all of Tyler Warren's prop bets for the upcoming season.
Yeah,
550 yards, I went under. 51 catches, something like that. I went under on all of his stats because of who's playing quarterback for him.
Some of it might have to do with whether or not Jonathan Taylor stays healthy. If Jonathan Taylor is the guy that will... we've seen Daniel Jones. If Daniel Jones ends up taking more snaps as a starting quarterback, we've seen what having a Saquon Barkley can do for Daniel Jones. Without Saquon, he was just nothing. So likewise, maybe Daniel Jones, if Jonathan Taylor is healthy, then Tyler Warren, I would take the over. If it's Anthony Richardson and then Jonathan Taylor is banged up and injured a lot, then no. Yeah, I would definitely take the under. I don't think people, honestly... people who don't follow the AFC South closely really don't understand how bad Anthony Richardson is.
Yeah,
they don't get it. Now, on any given Sunday, as we know, I'm terrified of him. Any given Sunday, he can make a couple of incredible throws and beat you with his legs. But game in, game out, he's just an atrocious quarterback.
Agreed. All right, do you want to hear what the anonymous execs are saying about the magnificent Gladstone and his bold move to get Travis Hunter? Let's do this.
The general manager of the Jaguars who's changing football as we know
it. Yes, yeah.
Everybody get ready. You're not even going to recognize this game they're playing on the field when they come to NRG Stadium.
This sport that we love is going to get changed by the magnificent Gladstone. He's magic like that. One exec says this, quote, I can't name, this is talking about Travis Hunter, obviously, I can't name a dual threat guy who played both ways at the level they are drafting him at. Deion Sanders, Rod Woodson, they all settled into whatever their position is. As this is my exact feeling right here. This sentence right here captures exactly how I feel about it. This exec says, as soon as he gets one injury and is out for 3 weeks, he's going to be on one side of the ball moving forward.
Yeah, that's, I don't.
This is a very precarious experiment they're conducting.
Never say never. Yeah. Never say never. Shohei Ohtani did something that nobody had done since Babe Ruth. So never say never. The difference is,
until he needed Tommy John surgery.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Shohei Ohtani did something nobody's ever done before and currently isn't doing it.
Isn't doing it, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, precisely.
You get the equivalent of a Tommy John surgery in the NFL and you're out for the year. You're not playing the other side of the ball either.
So
I think that's where, realistically, he might play more snaps than anybody's played in recent NFL history. But I will be dumbfounded if he's playing 120 snaps a game like he did in college. I just, personally, I think it's likely impossible to do it for an entire NFL season. And if you draft Travis Hunter number 2 overall and you trade all that stuff up to get him, I think you're deluding yourself if you think it's going to be, you got to draft him based on either how you project him as a receiver or how you project him as a cornerback who can do some extra stuff.
And they did this because of both. And I think there's all kinds of quotes from Gladstone after this draft that said, he had the one quote where he said, he's a first round pick as a corner, he's a first round pick as a wide receiver, which tells me like that's justifying a lot of the capital they gave up for him. And he had this to say when he was introducing Travis Hunter at his introductory press conference earlier this week.
You know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar. And really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person, he's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him, from the football field to the city to the game of football itself.
No pressure.
Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Okay. Let's get our applause in. Yeah,
good job, press conference crew. Yeah. Like, the guys clap. Good job. That's great reporting.
Way to go.
Him basically, it almost sounded like a eulogy for an all-time great who had died or something.
It did.
You know, like we've been thinking he's had a lifetime to build this up. He's very happy with himself for changing the game of football. Mostly making it about himself. The biggest thing, one of the dumbest things I saw on draft weekend was Booger McFarland was making a case that in some respects it'll be easier to play both ways in the NFL because the tempo isn't as fast. Because you've got more time to rest between plays and what have you. Like, all right, but on average, you're also covering every single week a better wide receiver. Even when you're playing the worst teams, you're facing better wide receivers every week than you faced in the vast majority of your games in college. Not to mention, this simple part, this is if he's playing defensive back. So if he's playing wide receiver, which that's going to be his main position, but also defensive back. From the defensive back side of things, you also don't have to cover as long in college. Mm-hmm. You're covering inferior receivers, and the ball is coming out so much faster as you're playing a heavy dose of zone. It's just not...
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
The same physical challenge.
I
hope they try to play him. I hope they play him 120 snaps.
I think there's a chance that that's what they're trying to do here. And in some ways, in some ways, you almost need to justify what you moved up to go get him. That's a lot that they gave up. There's a good chance. I know the Texans gave up a first to get Will Anderson, and everybody's saying, well, that's going to be a top five pick. The Texans are going to be terrible, and then they weren't. So I do want to acknowledge that there's a possibility that that first round pick next year that they gave up to get Travis Hunter, the Jags could be a 10-win team this year. We don't know. They may very well be. Maybe Liam Cohen helps Trevor Lawrence figure some things out. But the whether they're a 12-win team or a 5-win team doesn't change the amount of stress that it puts on Travis Hunter to have to play that amount of snaps. Everything that's coming out of Jacksonville leads me to believe that they're treating him as a at the very least, a rotational player on both sides of the ball, if not a full-time player on both sides of the football.
And honestly, I've seen this so many times over and over again, just when you take a guy with incredible physical talent, the absolute textbook thing you need to do is first get him comfortable in his main position, his chosen position. And don't put anything more on his plate until he gets comfortable there. Maybe the long term is that, they really expect him to go 120 snaps. I hope they try to have him do it all at once right from the get-go. I mean, I saw this with Mario Williams. You know, Mario Williams, his rookie year, they were having him play defensive tackle on third down. They were having him play left end, right end, all of this. And he just never got comfortable. And these coaches, and especially rookie coaches and first-time coaches like Liam Cohen, they get eyes as big as saucers, eyes as wide as a sphinx, Sean. And they just want to do it all right away. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the right thing to do, but I hope that's what the Jaguars do.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the question, the Shohei comparison is interesting because the Dodgers gave Shohei Ohtani $700 million. It's going to be spread out over the course of like the next 20 or 30 years, but they gave him $700 million. And when they gave that to him, it was presumably because he was going to be pitching and hitting. Like that's $20 million more a year than anybody had ever gotten to that point. Probably more than that. Because he was going to be a two-way guy. To this point, he's not been for the Dodgers. But when he's been doing the one thing he's been asked to do, he wins MVPs. Like, he's elite, elite at both. Yeah. I guess that would be the question with Travis Hunter, Seth. The equivalent of the $700 million, like the unprecedented give to go get it, would be all those draft picks. You know, like you're trading your second, another first next year to go get a guy who's not a quarterback.
Right.
And the question would be, okay, well, if the time comes, which could come sooner rather than later, to this executive's point, if Travis Hunter starts to get banged up, you cannot have him playing both ways. You just can't. Is he good enough at one of those things to justify that? And that's a real big question mark for me. Like anybody, is any cornerback or wide receiver good enough to give up a 2 and a 1 next year to go get a guy who does both? May very well be, and if you need butts in seats, that's a whole nother thing. But just as a player, may very well be a guy who does just one of those things. Boy, he better be either Calvin Johnson as a wide receiver or Deion Sanders in his prime as a cornerback.
You know, and honestly, I think they're doing a disservice to Travis Hunter. This is all me wanting Travis Hunter to fail specifically because he plays for the Jaguars. Yeah. But just imagine, think about the way they're presenting him in that press conference. Like, this is what did D'Amico talk about with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson? He wants to take pressure off of those guys.
Yeah.
You don't need to heap more pressure onto them. They have enough self-generated pressure on their own. The expectations from others are very, very large. That D'Amico's felt that his job is to take pressure off of those guys. And with a lot of great athletes, that is, it's young athletes, you're trying to get them to relax a little bit. Mm-hmm. The Magnificent Gladstone is sitting in there promising that this guy's going to revolutionize the game
football. Not just
You know?
Yes.
Hey, welcome to the NFL, kid. Just so you know, we're expecting you to revolutionize the game.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
Let him learn the playbook first, no Magnificent
pressure.
G.
No pressure. Oh. No pressure. Well, you know, the Athletic had an article. It turns out the Magnificent Gladstone has a little bit of Ryan Poles in him, where he's not afraid to allow the media into his
embedded media,
into his into his ecosystem.
It's a smart strategy.
Yeah,
people have been calling Ryan Poles brilliant for years without winning anything, just because he's got embedded journos
anything.
With him all the time.
Yeah. So he had Michael Silver was in the Jags war room for the draft. That's the big thing, man. You allow a journo into the war room, like the sacred, the sanctity of the war room, you have a friend forever. Seth, I don't know if you knew this, but you are intangibly rich. You, Seth Payne, are intangibly rich. The magnificent Gladstone's descriptor of what he looks for first and foremost in a player is guys who are intangibly rich. Tony Boselli is quoted in this article. On draft day, he said this, and Boselli is hook, line, and sinker in on the magnificent Gladstone. He loves the Maggie G, man. He says this with Boselli. There was a clear understanding, talking about the Jaguar teams that you were a part of, Seth.
Right.
There was a clear understanding of who was in charge and how things were going to get done. It wasn't always fun. It was a grind, but you knew where you stood. We weren't the most talented team, but to use a term that James loves but didn't exist back then, we were intangibly rich.
Yeah. We weren't intangibly rich enough to win a champion. Couldn't beat the Titans.
Against the Titans.
You know, the Titans had some intangibles themselves, apparently.
You were intangibly homeless.
Oh, no, yeah. I wish that term had existed back then. My career was a constant battle between coaches and scouts, I think. Coaches loved me. Personnel guys were like, what the hell, this fat white guy? And like, no, Dom Capers or Tom Coffer's like, you just gotta trust me. The kid's just, he's intangibly rich.
So you didn't have, it was strictly the physical stuff that the scouts were like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah. I didn't check off enough boxes on their little clipboards.
They were wrong.
But the coaches loved me.
They were wrong. Because
I got the job done, Sean.
Hell yeah, man.
Dadgummit.
Hell yeah.
With my intangible riches.
You didn't even know at the time. You were intangibly rich. You were exactly what the magnificent Gladstone would have been looking. As we make fun of him, know that you were exactly what he was looking for.
I walked in, and I didn't have a lot of classic swag, but I had a large invisible pendant of intangibles around my chest at all times. Yes. I had a gaudy. I just had a gigantic... not plated with anything because it was intangible pendant around my neck. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That's my swag.
I'm just picturing
it. Cutcliffe, who was a Duke coach, and said Daniel Jones.
Yes.
They know at Duke that the best swag is no swag.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah. David Cutcliffe, which that's David Cutcliffe to a T.
Swagless.
Apparently, the Maggie G has labels. They have a big board where they've got the players divided into very unconventional categories.
Yeah.
Beginning with these are the categories: math changers. Which only Hunter and Ashton Gentry made that category.
Tip the tables. They changed the mathematics changers. Of the whole situation. Okay.
Reliable starter. Uh-huh. Starting talent, buyer beware. Ooh, that would have been a fun list to look at.
So these are the Jaguars.
Jaguars.
This is how they category. Okay.
These are their buckets. Yeah, math changers.
Buyer beware. So that would be like character issues or something.
Yep. Early contributor. Intangible. This is a bucket name. Intangibly rich enough to contribute early. That's the name of a category for this guy. Only the magnificent Gladstone could have a category with six words in it. Intangibly rich enough to contribute early. And then the last two, talented enough to contribute early, less refined. That's a category.
Talented enough, but less refined. Yeah. So it doesn't have the intangible riches or the whatever else.
Maybe
it
needs
is.
Some okay. smoothing off, I guess. He's a little raw.
So you can be in multiple buckets there, I'm guessing.
I don't
know.
It
sounds like you could be in some of the, okay.
I don't know. I don't think so. That's not how buckets work, man. Not fit for us was the last bucket, which I guess that would be a fun list to look at. Who does the magnificent Gladstone think is not intangibly rich at all?
Yeah, I wish those would leak more often.
Yes. Yeah, it was great when they used to take people would take a picture of the war room and Jerry Jones, that happened to a couple times. Like, his whole big board's behind him as a picture's getting taken.
Who gave them an F? Tell me who gave the Jaguars an F.
Oh, Austin Mock. Austin Mock. He's the guy from The Athletic who does... We did an article about him last week on this show where he fed all the players into his little computer and it spit out the win totals. So he's a guy this is very, like, value-based stuff. And he does his report cards on a curve where there's only... It's because which is the smart thing to do. It's a zero-sum game. Like, if you give everybody A's, like, it's not going to be that way. So he's got, like, four A's, four A minuses, all the way down to F. And the magnificent Gladstone got an F from Austin Mock in his report card article.
It seems like he gave them an F almost exclusively based on them being too aggressive in
the value of the trade.
Travis Hunter.
Yes.
I feel like that's a little harsh. I feel like you got to bring more to the table. Yeah. I mean, you can, let's say you're taking a test in actual school, and maybe there's four questions worth 25 points. Mm-hmm. All right, if you score 0 points on the one that's worth 25 points, you can still salvage a passing grade if you do it well enough on the others, I guess. And I wouldn't grade it a 0 out of 25 for, you know, trading too aggressively up for Travis Hunter to take him at a spot where most people expected him to go.
I
can't grade them that harshly for him. I admire the aggressiveness and boldness of the decision. It could easily blow up in their face, but I don't think, given that Travis Hunter might very well be a unicorn. Okay, you're swinging on a unicorn.
Yeah,
the same way you swing for the fences on a quarterback.
Are you more nervous about Cam? Well, you may not be nervous about either of them. I'm not super nervous about either. But are you more nervous that the Magnificent Gladstones' aggressiveness to go get Travis Hunter is a sign that they're going to do things that make them a contender? Or are you more nervous that Cam Ward actually becomes that guy in Tennessee?
I'd be more nervous about Cam Ward. Yeah. I think that, for one, that's the more normal thing, is that, oh, a guy taking number one overall at quarterback. A lot of times it doesn't work out, but a lot of times it does work out. And the Titans, given what they were last year as a team, their defense was way better than the stats showed, as we know and as we saw. And I think there's still, I think they made improvements kind of structurally on the offense that if they can do right by Cam Ward, and if he does end up being a good NFL quarterback, that the overall scenario for the Titans, I actually feel better about than whatever Travis Hunter can give them in the short term with Jacksonville.
I wonder what that dynamic's going to be in that quarterback room. It's very similar to what the Texans experienced over the, like, from 2021 to 2023. You know, they drafted Davis Mills, granted in the third round, not the second, like Will Levis, but they handed the keys for the most part, you know, other than a little bit of yo-yoing in and out of the lineup, with Davis Mills. Like, he was their anointed starter going into year two, and it, you know, wasn't good either year. They were bad. There's a reason they were picking second. Bring in C.J. Stroud, and Davis Mills is still in the building and seems to have settled in as a backup quarterback. I just wonder if Will Levis is going to go as quietly into the night as Davis Mills did. With Cam Ward's going to be their starting quarterback, right? I mean, they're going to hand the keys. Number one overall pick. They're going to hand the keys to Cam Ward in Tennessee. Does Will Levis accept that role the same way Davis Mills did here?
I think with Will Levis, as much as I've piled on him over and over again, mostly because he's just so dumb when he runs with the ball and the hits that he takes, I do feel that he was kind of thrust into a position that I don't think he ever looked comfortable in, because he wasn't supposed to be there as a top five pick and everything else that goes along with it. He also, that fanfare was kind of a brief scenario. So, like, I think he's probably been humbled enough that he gets it.
Yep.
I don't know. I think there's probably a place for him in the NFL as kind of a journeyman, you know, career backup fringe starter type if he develops.
Same way there is with Davis Mills. Yeah, for sure. Someone says that we need to bring in Drew Hodgdon for the anonymous executive bit. Do you and Drew hit the executive?
Yeah, Drew and I hit the ignite. Yeah, I haven't done that with him in a while. My former Texans teammate. Drew's awesome because he's very cynical about everything always.
So he's perfect for the executive.
Yeah.
That's great.
He loves pointing out how stupid everybody is all the time.
Okay, maybe
he's very funny about it.
We'll take that under advisement. I like Drew. I'm all for bringing him in. All right,
Drew's got a lot on his plate right now. he's got some manufacturing company.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't he trying to single-handedly revitalize the manufacturing industry?
Yeah. Orders have all of a sudden dried up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, maybe Execanon might not be the thing to do right now. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we roll on here. We're gonna circle back to the Rockets at the top of the hour. The Rockets, by coming back from down 3-1, they could be reliving some magic here. We got an anniversary coming up on some 3-1 magic. We'll do that at 8 o'clock. Coming up next, Mike Florio has his new co-celebra in the NFL, and it has to do with prank phone calls to NFL football players and how the numbers were gotten. We will get to HOA Florio coming up next. Magnificent Gladstone elicits a reaction on the text page every time. Am I wrong for wanting to throat punch the Magnificent Gladstone? You're going to hear him again in Take a Mania at 9, just so you know.
If you saw him say it with his little trendy blazer with a hoodie underneath and everything, it makes it that much worse.
Yep. Someone says
he's the kid. You know who he is.
Who is he?
You know, in any kind of like study group or section, you know, any TA-led section in college or something, if it's 40 minutes long, he's talking 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At 39 minutes, he's like, well, you know, I've got an interesting point to make about Woodrow Wilson, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just insufferable. So impressed with himself and his intelligence.
Oh, yeah. No, the Travis Hunter pick was all about him, for sure. Now, this texter promises that Travis Hunter, the newcomer, is going to come in and steal the show.
Mm.
Jags lady, man. Jags lady. She must be pumped.
He's got to make it through the temptations that are everywhere in Jacksonville that come from being a large enough city, but still a very big fish in a very small pond.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times the football players are treated almost like high school players. And the adulation and attention and things offered up to you are just they're pretty, you know, he's going to be careful.
We'll see if he can do it, man. We'll see if he can. Supposedly, he's very fishing and football are like his two things.
No, and he has. Yeah, that's honestly. I liked piling on Magnificent Gladstone, but Travis Hunter. I wish he'd gone outside the division.
He's going to be a good player.
And he's a good kid.
That
was for anybody that was like trying to act like it was all Dion, and that's the reason people didn't like Shadur. There was zero things negative said about Travis Hunter and his personality or anything. He was Dean's List as a psychology major. It wasn't Dean's List in basket weaving or anything.
Yeah.
Like he checks off every box for what you want out of a football player.
Yeah.
And I just wish he wasn't in the division.
I do too. But it'll make the games. It'll add a little more juice to the games. That part will be
ideally,
fun.
Ideally, what happens for Travis Hunter is the Jaguars woefully misuse him.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting traded in a ridiculous trade, and then he goes off into the NFC somewhere
and
becomes Shohei Ohtani.
Deal with him once every 4 years. Then that said, I'm excited to watch him go up against Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. I'm excited to see if he can match up with some of these receivers the Texans have.
Yeah.
Like that'll be fun. So we know that the prank call to Shadur Sanders came from the defensive coordinator's son of the Falcons. The Falcons DC, Jeff Ulbrich, his son Jax, 21-year-old, took the number off of an open iPad of his dad's, wrote it down, and then proceeded with his buddies from Ole Miss to prank call Shadur Sanders on day two of the draft and tell him he was getting drafted by the Saints until they broke the news that he was not getting drafted by the Saints. It was a prank phone call. Mike Florio has taken a very different angle on this story, Seth, but good for Mike Florio that he's found one other thing to stand on the table for. I'm curious. Sometimes Florio stands on the table for things and you just laugh at it. Other times I'm like, all right, he's got a pretty good point on this one.
He's got a point.
Yeah.
He's annoying. He's kind of got a Magnificent Gladstone element to him to where you're like, just the fact that you're saying it makes me not like what you're saying.
Yes.
So you got to separate the message from the messenger
sometimes. Okay, so here's what he says in an article earlier this week about this situation. He says, this whole thing only came to light because the prank happened, the whole taking of the phone number, and it blew up. But for the reaction to the prank, no one ever would have known that Jax Ulbrich had misappropriated inside information. And that's the key, Florio says. Inside information. The Ulbrich situation is a reminder that, one, inside information exists. Two, it can be easily obtained. And three, it can be used for gambling.
Oh, okay. Let's see. All right. So as opposed to the previous centuries of both business and sports where apparently people didn't get inside information for anything, I guess that's the question. I guess it's a reminder that, some of this stuff can get kind of, people do dodgy things, and if they can find information, then they might be. He could have. Jax Ulbrich could have used something he found on the iPad to bet the futures market or to bet the futures bet
or during the
prop bets
or during the season his dad leaves his iPad open at home and he sees some game plan things on there that he construes as like, all right, well, this is a good reason to bet so and so.
I always think prop bets, especially with that, if you're looking over or unders on various players, if you see the game plan or whatever. It happens. I mean, okay, news alert, it happens. This was 2,000 people had that number. So it was confidential.
And they sent it out in an email, like a mass email to 2,000 people.
So it's not, at the end of the day, it's okay, a prank call happened because of it. It's not the end of the world. Yeah. It's embarrassing. They shouldn't have done it, obviously. But it's not the end of the world. Yeah, likewise in business and in sports, inside information seeps out. By and large, it doesn't end up being a huge, huge deal, but sometimes it does.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Everybody
stay alert, head on a swivel. There's insider info out there.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I guess the message was clearly sent to Ulbrich, like, hey, you need to do a better job of preventing that. Like, close your iPad when you're not.
What does Florio sum it all up as? Is he forecast doom for America?
I'll read it for you. From the moment the gambling goal, would it shock anyone if a 21-year-old would be trying to finagle inside information that he and his buddies could use to get an edge on their betting apps? I would answer, no, that wouldn't shock anybody. From the moment, this is Florio, from the moment the gambling gold rush started nearly 7 years ago, it became obvious that the NFL isn't nearly as concerned as it needs to be about how its inside information can be misused by those who hope to tilt the odds in their favor. The Sanders prank call proves conclusively that the means for getting it exists.
Right. No, so this is where Florio is wrong. They've always
Can I read the last couple sentences?
Yeah.
And the clock keeps ticking toward the inevitable scandal. Will the NFL button things up before it happens?
Right. Okay, yeah. Has there never been a gambling scandal in sports before? The likelihood that there will be more gambling scandals, yes, probably increases because there's more gambling going on now.
That's true. The sheer volume of gambling, yes.
So the likelihood of it, but I mean, there have been gambling scandals in sports before. The NFL has always been very aware about it and very vigilant about it. That's why the injury report exists. Yeah. The NFL is always very careful not to admit that's why it exists. But the reason that they publicly put the injury report out there is because they want to lessen the incentive for people to go digging about injuries. Because gamblers especially, if they can find out some inside intel on whether or not the QB is going to play or something like that, they got a leg up. They've always been concerned about it. And for Florida to act like the NFL was just whistling along, being like, yeah, we're going to invite gambling in. And no, we don't have to change anything. They've always been concerned about it. Florio, stop it.
No, that's true.
And I'm not saying it's not a problem or a concern.
Right.
But it always has been.
Yeah.
It's just more volume now than it was before. And this was a phone number, Florio. Like, this wasn't, I'm guessing that this wasn't guarded with, and it didn't have the same scrutiny it does as anything like game plan info or anything else like that.
Yeah. I guess it's just how far Jax Ulbrich wanted, if he wanted to gamble, how deep does he go digging on his old man's iPad to find out the folders with the game plans? I personally think the iPad of the training staff is more dangerous from an inside information standpoint than the coaches. If you want to know my, you know, if you want to know the truth, like, injuries to me are a bigger thing than game planning. You can watch a team play and know 95% what it is they're going to do game plan wise on any given Sunday. But the injuries, even with the injury report that they put out, they at least try to tip their hat to the gambling part.
And that's where that was already in place.
Yeah.
Like, they still have, that's why the injury report exists.
For gamblers.
And yes, there will be gambling scandals in the future, just as there were in the early part of the 20th century. There will be gambling scandals.
Do you think Florio?
Good job, Florio. I'm predicting that something that has happened in the past will continue to happen in the future.
Do you think he'll take a victory lap when this inevitable, what he calls the inevitable scandal happens? Like, hey, man. Told you it was going to be humid in July. All right.
Yeah, I mean, that's
here
what you're saying. Like, hey,
it's 98 degrees,
Sean,
just like I wrote about 3 months ago. Yeah.
Sean, inevitably, somebody's going to commit a crime in Houston today. It's what this has all been leading to.
Okay.
Somebody's going to commit a crime in Houston
mark that,
today.
Mark that so that when Seth's wrong about a crime being committed in Houston today, I can throw it up in his face.
I told everybody it would happen, and then it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what Pope Zaza does. An entire Gladstone clip is too much. Stop it.
Yeah.
I disagree. Travis Hunter didn't even revolutionize college football. That's a text message. Okay, that's debatable. He didn't
revolutionize his team to the degree he should have.
No. And others have done what he did before, but very few.
Or I should say he didn't do it with his own team the way he could have.
Yep.
If he'd been on a better football team.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Rockets game 6 tonight. Huge game. This is a theme for the Rockets in the postseason throughout their history. 30 years ago and 10 years ago, can they do it this year? Coming back from down 3-1, The last time they were in a game six like this one, oh man, we got to relive some of that. We will do that, and we'll get you ready for game six here in the 8 o'clock hour coming up next.